I had 5 pupils.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Back again, it is Kel Dansby and Andreas Hale. Shout out to the sponsors. You guys already know. This is actually a special episode this week, trying up a little something different. So there's weeks that'll come up where me and Andreas don't have a lot of time on our hands. So we got to kind of condense the show, keep it to an hour. So we're trying this new format. It's called the Versus format for the Corner Podcast. Testing my skills, my knowledge against the great Andreas Hale. You know, I'm going to come out victorious. Dre, are you ready for this?
Yeah, but first, remember what I said about I wouldn't be surprised if Golden State swept the Cleveland?
I don't remember that. It's not.
You don't?
I don't know. No, I don't want to listen to that episode.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. I'll just making sure.
No, just letting you know. What a hell of a game, though.
KD, yeah, well.
KD's a killer.
All I said, too much firepower. I mean, you're going to be, look, we're not going to get into this too deep, but you're going to be a killer when you have 3 killers around you. Well, 2 killers around you. It's not as hard to be a killer. Not saying that Kevin Durant was a great player before, but it's a lot easier when you got Steph that can nuke from anywhere and Klay Thompson can get hot. So it's a little bit easier for Kevin Durant than it is LeBron James.
No, that's very true. But trust, LeBron isn't going to sit on his hands this offseason. I wouldn't be surprised that Tristan Thompson contract coming right off the books, he's going to go get help. I'm not sure if it's going to work, but he's going to try. I mean, he might try to bring in old man Wade. He might try to, you know, finagle a Melo trade. Jimmy Butler's hanging in the wind. You have Paul George possibly coming off free agency. I think Chris Paul is coming up as well. There's some options.
There's some options, but, you know, it won't be Chris Paul. If it were to be anybody, it could be Paul George. But even then, you're still looking at a Golden State team where you have all 4 of their stars are under 30.
Yeah, I mean, scary. LeBron's not looking at the future. LeBron's looking at right now.
I mean, no, I'm just saying. I'm
Yo,
saying.
Steal if, two.
You can, if you pick up anybody, like, name a player. The only player that LeBron could pick up that would help would be somebody like Anthony Davis. You need somebody young that can go.
Davis, with, Boogie, something like that.
No, Anthony Davis. I'm not even going to put Boogie in this conversation. I'm saying Anthony Davis will help you. Like, because this team that we're watching right now is the best offensive team I've ever seen in my life.
No, and that's true, but I mean, last night you could see when LeBron turns it on, he's still the best player in the world.
Yeah, but he scored, how many points did he score in the fourth quarter?
Well, he died out. That's been the story of the series, right?
That's my point. Like, we got a 7-game series with a 73-9 Golden State team that added arguably the second or third best player in the NBA right now.
It's a tall task.
Dude, too much firepower. I said it from the jump. Too much firepower. The team's too good.
And I'm secretly happy I didn't want to go back to Oakland for game 5. So shout out to them for saving me with that one last night. About to change that ticket over.
Yeah, so let's do this.
All right, so like I said before, it's the Versus episode before Andreas Hale got me talking basketball to gloat. We're going to choose a side on each topic in different categories. So you'll hear some boxing, some wrestling, some MMA, some others. We're actually going to start out with the other, and that's hip-hop, which we usually talk on this show. I was going to throw Trump in here, but we don't got enough time for that. We don't got. We're going to battle impeachment or over under a year left of Trump. But we're on time constraints. That's what we need Ryan McKinnell in for. So we're starting off with Drake versus Kendrick. Who is hotter right now? Not career.
Let's be clear. You put the hottest rapper right now.
Hottest rapper right now.
Okay, there you go.
Are you going to battle semantics with me?
Of course. Go ahead.
All right.
Go ahead.
I'm starting it off. I'm taking Drake. Drake's hotter than Kendrick right now. Drake is on everything. And I don't want to bring awards into it, but he's setting records. He just had the most awards, Billboard's history. That performance was crazy at the Bellagio. Water fountains, water everywhere. There's fire and shit. Whenever you got fire and pyro, you're literally hot. And he's on everything. The Gucci Mane song is stuck in my head. I listen to it at least 6 times a day. And I hate listening to radio, but if it's on, I'll let it rock. So I didn't even know that was a Gucci song. I thought it was a Drake song. Until I had to try to search it on iTunes, and I couldn't find it. So Drake is killing everything he's touching. The playlist is growing on me. Kendrick, great project. One of my favorite albums from Kendrick. As of late, but even then he drops it and he just fades away. Drake is still here. Kendrick has dropped a couple dope features. Let me not say that. He's on a remix. I forgot what song it is, but he's on the remix and absolutely murders that. Still not hot, as hot as Drake right now. Drake's just on that different level, and I'm not a Drake stan. You've been a Drake fan forever, but right now I can't deny it. Drake is hotter than Kendrick only because he's more in the public eye, and I feel like it's going to carry him through the summer.
Yeah, you're wrong. The hottest rapper right now is Kendrick Lamar. If you're talking about the hottest pop star, sure, it could be Drake. Drake is pop. He's popular in terms of pop music. His playlist is mostly singing and doing other things. But when you're talking about rappers, Kendrick Lamar is hotter than Drake by a country mile.
No.
But Kendrick Lamar just went berserk on the Mask Off remix, which is arguably one of the hottest songs that Future's ever done. And I don't even like Future. But that, like, the Mask Off challenge by itself was huge, and that was viral. So in terms of rappers, Kendrick is of course hotter. I mean, people are still playing Damn. He's going on a tour where the tickets are astronomically high to go see him, and he's selling out arenas. So he hasn't disappeared. He's going on tour to clean up what's left. He's going to clean up his own confetti, which that confetti is going to be more dollars that are going to come down. So he's on TMZ. Like, people are taking video of this dude getting pulled over, like, for nothing. Or they're shitting on him because he bought his sister, what did he buy her?
A Nissan or something?
No, he bought her like a Camry, a Corolla.
Yeah.
And people were pissed. And I was like, this is ridiculous. By the way,
that's the same shit as the Lexus. It just has a different emblem.
Yeah, I mean, but the point is, it's like, why are we even talking about this? Kendrick can buy his sister whatever she wants. He just graduated high school. I'm not buying any of my kids anything expensive, right? Like, until you can prove to me that you deserve it. Like, that. No matter how much money I have, you have to teach your kids the value of the dollar. But my point is this. Kendrick is the hottest rapper. Drake, yeah, he did great at the Billboard Awards, but people have already forgotten about Views. As much as I love Passion Fruit, as much as I love Get It Together on the Views album, I mean, I'm sorry, not the Views album. What the hell am I talking about to you? This is what I'm talking about.
It's the playlist.
The point is that Drake, yes, when Drake shows up on somebody's work, yeah, he's hot. And people are impressed with, in love with Drake does, but everybody talks about Kendrick. Like, this is somebody who is the hottest rapper, period. There's nobody touching him in terms of rap and what people want to see him do. Drake's just a bigger pop star.
The Mask Off remix definitely helps Kendrick. But Drake, I feel like, is going to carry this into the summer. He's on a Nicki Minaj joint. The DJ Khaled album drops here in a couple of weeks. You know he's going to be all over that.
Tooth Max is hot. I can't front.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just all the time. Drake's just going to pump out hit after hit after hit in the summer. And Kendrick's on tour, which is great, but it's going to do the normal Kendrick, and not to lump J. Cole in this conversation, but J. Cole-esque, drop an album, 2 dope songs, go on tour, see you guys in 3 years. So by mid-July, it's going to be like, okay, all right, Kendrick. Like, it's going to be all about Drake.
Well, you said the hottest rapper right now. So Kendrick is hotter than Drake right now. Drake hasn't done his summer thing yet. More Life came out. What did More Life come out in February? And I'd say Drake was completely silent. But, yeah, he's always around. But you said the hottest rapper. And that's Kendrick. And that's right now. And his tour is going to be is something that everybody wants to see. And that's right now. That is absolutely right now.
So Drake drops that tour dates, that tour schedule on.
Yeah, and all the pop people show up. I'm just saying, you said rapper, I'm saying Kendrick Lamar. You saw him pop star, it's Drake.
That's like tough.
It's Drake is a pop star. I mean, Kendrick is a pop star in some senses as well. But in terms of a rapper and who, like, bars, it's Kendrick Lamar.
All right, well, you guys have to decide and tell us who won. Don't side with Andreas just because you think it's Andreas and you want to have a goddamn Kel moment. No, tell the truth. Tell us on Twitter who won this discussion. Who's hotter right now, Drake or Kendrick Lamar? But right now, on to the next subjects.
The first pupil, his name was Santin. He practiced the centipede style. He was known as the centipede. In fact, the speed he moved was as fast as a centipede. Ha! Ha!
Next up, we have Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson versus Dana White. Dana's cracking the whip finally in the UFC. Dana's telling him he has to fight who he wants him to fight, and that's TJ Dillashaw. Dana's going for the money. And really, right now, WME just cares about the money. So, I'm taking Dana White's side because this is what he set up. People say, oh, the precedent is to let the fighters pick the fights and all this stuff. No, the precedent is to set the fights that make the most money. And the most money right now is TJ Dillashaw versus Demetrius Johnson. Because without that, Demetrius Johnson's a FS1 guy. With it, he's a pay-per-view guy that they can stick at the beginning of September, the end of September, early October, and they can carry that card. Without that, Demetrius Johnson doesn't have a legit foil, and he's not selling anything. He's not selling pay-per-views. I mean, the guy can be a sellout on Twitch, and people tune in, but that doesn't convert to pay-per-view buys. And with Conor McGregor out for God knows how long with this Mayweather fight, GSP not returning until the end of the year, if that, and then you have Bisping just waiting. I mean, they need stars. John Jones in DC, I'm not even counting until I see that shit. And until I'm in LA and the fight's happening and they're walking to the octagon, I still won't believe it yet. Because I fell for that. I fell for that hoax way too many times. I'm not falling for the jig again. So Mighty Mouse is in the wrong. I understand he wants to break the record. He wants to pass Silva. He wants to be the greatest of all time in something. But if you do that, you take whatever challengers come along. That's the definition of a champion. You don't say, I take the number one contender. No, you take the best fighter. And the best fighter is TJ Dillashaw. Now, if he doesn't make the weight, he's going to give you his money. It's a win-win. Then it's a catch weight. You don't got to worry about the little record on the line. You don't got to worry about losing your belt. Everyone wins. You get the dough. You get a random fight. Go on. You fight who you want to fight after that. Get your record. If he makes the weight, then you go out there and you prove that you can do what Dominic Cruz did. You proved that you can do what TJ Dillashaw said he was going to do. And that's beat TJ Dillashaw. There's no reason to be scared. There's no downside in this. I don't even know why Mighty Mouse is complaining.
You know, everything that you said would make sense if Dana White hasn't doubled back on his word before. If Dana White wasn't allowing fighters to take money fights, if Dana White wasn't allowing George St. Pierre, who never competed in the middleweight division, to fight Michael Bisping for a middleweight title, he'd be okay. Like, because Dana White has complained about someone like Tyron Woodley trying to pick a fight. But he doesn't complain when Conor McGregor is trying to fight at lightweight and not defending his featherweight title. Or he complains when he wants to fight Floyd Mayweather and holding up divisions. But then he's going to be upset with Demetrius Johnson, who's trying to abide by the honor system. Because let's be honest here. Why are there rankings if we're not going to use them? Right? All DJ is trying to do is restore order to the system. Now, more importantly, you look at a situation where DJ is going to be set up to fight somebody like TJ Dillashaw. Let's be completely honest here. Is this fight really selling?
It could be a pay-per-view fight.
is it really selling? Like, Demetrius Johnson against Ray Borg, or Demetrius Johnson versus TJ Dillashaw, to an MMA fan, a few more of us will probably buy more pay-per-views. But to the general public, they don't care. Let's be real. They don't care. They don't care about Demetrius Johnson versus TJ Dillashaw. It's the casual fight fans aren't spending $50 to watch Dillashaw, Demetrius Johnson. It's like Chocolatito right now. DJ's in that tough spot. He's not going to sell. And I'm glad he's finally spoke up, because I've been trying to get DJ to say this for years. He hasn't been marketed properly. And now Dana White, like, whether you want to admit it or not, these are bullying tactics. I'm going to shut down your entire division because you're too good. What the fuck kind of shit is that? This is ridiculous. So to try to tell him, like, obviously, from a fan's perspective, I would say, yes, I'd like to see the DJ-TJ fight more than DJ and Ray Borg. However, Dana White set a precedent. And then Dana White has gone back to say, I'm tired of guys talking about money fights. All right. Well, DJ's not talking about it. He's the one guy who has consistently abided by the rules to fight who is in his division, who is ranked. Because as unfortunate it is, yes, he's probably going to wash Ray Borg. But whose fault is that? TJ's only getting this fight because Cody Garbrandt got hurt. And there is no guarantee he makes it weight. Now, when you say everybody wins, if TJ doesn't make weight and he comes in heavier than Demetrius Johnson and Demetrius Johnson loses that fight, everybody does not win, because perception is everything. So if he loses, whether it's the middleweight streak or not, the fact is he lost. And that's what people are going to remember. They're not going to care about what weight TJ was at. They're not going to care about all the semantics going into the fight. All they're going to look at is what happened in that cage, and they're going to say, DJ's not the greatest. He lost. Because I guarantee you, if he loses to TJ, regardless of like a 5-pound weight difference or whatever the fact may be, DJ won't be the number one pound-for-pound fighter anymore.
People hold that against him. Yeah, that's true.
There's a loser here. So, again, if Dana White didn't set the precedent by complaining about fighters chasing money fights, which is, strangely enough, a black guy, Tyron Woodley, and another black guy now, Demetrius Johnson. I'm not saying it's racial.
Stay woke.
My point is that if you've allowed George St. Pierre to do this and you were like, now you're going back, so he's going to fight at welterweight. Like, dude, you got to have a standard here, right? You got to fight within, like, there should be a reason for rankings. This isn't boxing. That's the whole point of the UFC, is that this is not supposed to be boxing, where guys can just jump around and fight whoever they want. This is all Conor McGregor's fault, by the way. It's all Conor McGregor's fault.
Don't blame McGregor for everything.
It's McGregor's fault. Good or bad, he's changed the dynamic of MMA completely. Like, the concept of money fights didn't really even exist until Conor McGregor came along. So all that to say this, one guy who has done everything right by the UFC, never complained, always fought whoever was in front of him, didn't say shit. Now you're going to try to switch it up on some last minute shit and suggest, if TJ doesn't make weight, we'll throw another guy in there. DJ deserves better than that. More importantly than anything else, pay that man, Sally.
I was about to say, he wants a mil. Only way he's getting close to a mil is TJ. So shut up and fight.
He needs to be guaranteed a mil for this fight. As much as he's done for the UFC, guarantee this man some money. You can't keep paying him pennies and expect him to fight TJ Dillashaw for nothing. It's a risk. Let's just be honest. Fighting TJ is a risk. Because TJ, all this does is, if he were to win, it just muddles up everything even more. But the fact is like, Demetrius Johnson is probably underpaid for being as good as he is. So if you want him to fight, pay the man to fight. You can't have him fight for the same money that he would fight Ray Borg to fight TJ Dillashaw from another division. Because that's not what Canelo's doing in boxing. That's not what other athletes are doing. Because if you're going to set the precedent that this is like boxing, pay the man for what he's worth.
Yeah, Nate Diaz didn't do that shit. Nate Diaz said, pay me what I'm worth to fight Conor. Pay me more than I'm worth.
That's what I'm saying. So if you don't want to pay him, let him fight Ray Borg and let him fight in his backyard, Seattle, in August, like your original plan was supposed to be, and move on. Because, dude, Cody will be back soon, and they can resume, because TJ's biggest money fight is against Cody Garbrandt, not Demetrius Johnson. So you might as well wait for that fight, because if you lose the DJ, it takes a little bit of luster off the TJ-Cody Garbrandt fight.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not sure. How would it take off of Cody Garbrandt fight? Because it would then be champion versus champion.
Because No. If TJ lost. Not if he won. TJ lost to DJ.
Yeah. I mean, that's the risk TJ is willing to take.
But it's a risk. It's an unnecessary risk. From an argumentative perspective, it's an unnecessary risk. Because it's not like Cody. Like, we haven't found out exactly how long Cody's going to be out. But if it's only going to be for a couple months, Just have the goddamn fight in October.
It's about what you can do now, though. And they're not making money now. No one can argue that the UFC is making money. Conor McGregor's fault. That's whose fault it is. But WME bought a lemon, and Dana's feeling the pressure. He got the icy cool breath of Ari on his neck. And he's trying everything in his mom's to make a fight that feels special. And this, even though it's on the smallest level of special, is special.
Casual fans still aren't tuning in. You might get another 30,000 pay-per-views out of this. 60, maybe.
Listen, you're not breaking the fans. Don't underestimate Dana. He'll just slap an interim belt on TJ Dillashaw just for the fuck of it, just to sell this fight.
It's selling. You know the funny thing about that is, it still doesn't sell fights. Because MMA fans are smarter than that, so they see through it, and casual fans don't care. They don't.
Dana, casual fans, by hook or casual, by crook.
Dude, casual fans care about who is the most mainstream fighter. Like to a lot of casual fans, like Nate Diaz is like a godsend. Even though this dude has lost his fair share of fights, the fact that he beat Conor McGregor makes him huge. And it's a mainstream thing. It's a casual thing. This is how combat sports works. These guys who are the more visible people, yeah, like Demetrius Johnson is not that guy. No matter who he fights, unless he fights Conor McGregor. So, just go do your ranking thing or pay him. That's it. That's how I feel.
Listen, I'm all for paying him, but DJ, if the money's there, got to take that shit. I don't want to hear about Ray Borg anymore.
Hey, if they pay him $1 million, I think DJ is going to take that fight. But they pay him $150,000, I'm pretty sure he's not going to take that fight.
They better pay him more than $150,000. I'm telling you that. And not getting pay-per-view points is a crock of shit. He's headlined a UFC fight.
Yes.
I don't understand a pay-per-view. I don't know how he didn't get pay-per-view points for that.
Listen, the man said he had to fly coach to another country for a fight as your champion. Come on, man. Come on.
You got to come out of pocket or something, man. Something's got to give. That's rough. All right, on to the next subject. Once again, make sure you guys tell us who you think is right in that situation. DJ or the UFC, we'll be waiting to hear on Twitter.
Now, number two, practice the snake style. He was known as the snake spirit. He had the speed of a snake. Snake style, known for its incredible agility. Agility and speed.
Sticking on the lines of blame everything on Conor McGregor, our next topic. Bigger boxing match of the year, Canelo Triple G or Mayweather McGregor? This was hard to split. You want me to go first? Yeah, you go first. You take this mic.
I'm gonna give you the opportunity to counter, right? I'm gonna give you the opportunity to counter for once.
Go 8 Mile. Let's see. Right. Let's see this.
So here we go. The bigger fight this year is Canelo Triple G. This is a very simple reason why it's the biggest fight this year. Because it's fucking happening. Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather isn't even happening. It's not even on the books. So yeah, I'm going to take the first punch here because we have a fight on the table that is actually happening that people are going to watch. It's the biggest fight for fight fans to appreciate. You want to talk about a big event? You can have your Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather. But that shit ain't happening this year. Steven Espinosa just recently said that nobody has contacted him about this fight at all. And if Showtime's not involved, there is no fight. More importantly, there is no fight this year. So Dana White can talk to Floyd Mayweather all he wants, which still hasn't happened yet. Dana White can talk to Conor McGregor all he wants, and they can strike their little deals. But if you don't have a network broadcasting the fight, I'm sorry to tell you, fight's probably not happening this year. So yes, Triple G and Canelo is the bigger fight this year.
All right. Fair point that the other one's not booked, but I'll tell you this. It's going to get booked. I am fully confident in that right now. Dana, don't let me down. It's going to happen, and I think they're going to put it on after Canelo Triple G just to make a point that you guys are good, but you guys aren't this. So, you know, all the talk of Mayweather and Dana White saying, oh, they took the date and all this stuff. I'm now on board with you when you say the date doesn't matter. They will come out in October and they will crush the numbers Triple G and Canelo Alvarez put up. And I fully expect Triple G Canelo Alvarez to get in the, what, 1.5s? Yeah. Which is big for boxing. Maybe a little bit more. And that's still going to be half, if not less than half, of what Mayweather-McGregor is going to draw in. Anything less than 2.7, and I'm shocked. Anything less than 2.7, and I don't know. I'll do some wild shit and film it and put it on the podcast page, on the social media or something. I'll put anything that is not going to be under 2.7 mil. And they'll probably charge $100 for the pay-per-view. And
people they won't
will
do that
still again. Buy it. They could do it again and people will still buy it because the intrigue is there. The fact that people actually doubt that Conor McGregor can land a punch. When I think Floyd is smart enough to let him hit him several times. Just hit him the right way. Floyd ain't going to get caught clean. This boxing. Everything's glancing. But just like in the Maidana fight, Floyd knows how to be hit when he wants to be hit. And he knows how to sell the drama. Triple G talks about big drama show. No, that's Floyd Mayweather. There's a reason why he has zero power now left in his career, and he's still putting up the best numbers as far as paydays that he's ever had. That Pacquiao fight had zero drama, zero power, anything. People were glued to that shit. Complaining all the way, but glued. Because they were expecting Pacquiao to land the punch. I remember it was the 6th or the 7th round. Pacquiao finally caught him with a clean punch. Everyone went crazy on Twitter. Everyone. Skip Bayless lost his damn mind. Everybody was getting hype. Pacquiao didn't land shit else. Because Floyd knows when to be hit. He knows how to build the intrigue. He knows to lean against the rope, cover his face, and take body punches like that's actually hurting him when it's not. And for all of these reasons, even the fight, not even the spectacle, the fight itself will end up bigger than Triple G versus Canelo. Because Triple G versus Canelo, no matter what anyone says, I expect it to be close. I expect it to be two high-class fighters, and it's going to be a 7 rounds to 5, or a 6 to 6 with a knockdown. It's going to be what we saw in Kovalev Ward, which is great boxing. But it's not the same as a what if boxing match. And that's what you get. What if Conor McGregor connects? And that sells so much more. That's why it's the biggest boxing match. And I don't think it goes into next year. I think Dana hits the panic button and gives Floyd whatever he wants. Because at this point, he can't be without Conor McGregor in the UFC for much longer. You got to hit the panic button. Let him fight for whatever. Take your little dough and come on so you can keep making us money. And we can make sure that we're capitalizing off of you and put you back in the situation where now we're taking all the money and giving you a little bit of it and not splitting it with anyone. Because the UFC has the best monopoly out. Conor McGregor's trying to break the mold, but at the end, he's always going to be underpaid. So you got to get his ass back under the umbrella as fast as you can. And they'll do anything to make the fight. You have no faith in it. I have all the faith in the world. It'll be bigger than Canelo and Triple G. Mind you, I'm going to enjoy every second of the Canelo and Triple G fight when we are there. But I'll have one eye on McGregor versus Mayweather.
Well, there's one thing I got to say to this. You said Floyd Mayweather knows how to get hit. The Marcos Maidana fight, he put himself in a position to make the fight more interesting.
Correct.
I don't think he wanted to get hit. He put himself against the ropes in the corner where he allowed Marcos Maidana to try to hit him.
Well, that's what I meant to say. That's what I was trying to say. And Canelo Alvarez did the same thing against Amir Khan, which is why I said Canelo learned that from that Floyd fight, where he went against the ropes and just kind of let Khan tee off on him for a second, but he's not getting hit clean. He's doing nothing.
Well, my point is Floyd was trying to sell a rematch. He ain't selling a rematch against Conor McGregor. I think he's going to need to beat that ass. Anything else is uncivilized. But to your point, yeah, if the fight gets made, it's the biggest event this year. As far as a fight is concerned, people will tune in. Everything's based on watching the fight. Like, the reason people want to watch Canelo Triple G is because it's competitive. People want to watch Mayweather McGregor because it's an event between the two. Because the build, nothing matters in the ring.
What has more question marks in the ring? Which fight is more unpredictable in the ring?
Canelo and Triple G.
That's not true.
That is very true. Come on, man.
Conor can knock out Mayweather. Mayweather can knock out Conor, which is crazy. He hasn't knocked out someone in 5 years, 6 years.
No, stop. For you to say that Conor can knock out Floyd, Conor has never fought in a boxing match in his life. How could we even say this?
Listen, I think it has a 0.0001, 0.0001111. Just take it all the way out. But it can happen.
So let's. That's if that's your point. You're clearly forgetting about the fact that Cotter cannot win a decision against Floyd Mayweather. Correct.
All right. No, I give you that. Fair point.
Okay. Can Canelo and Triple G? One of those guys can win a decision.
Correct.
One of those guys can be knocked out. It could be a one set. Like, we really don't know what we're getting with Canelo and Triple G. We're picking. Like, I've rolled with Triple G since
they... Do you think it's going to be a blowout fight in either direction?
Like, it could
just a cakewalk.
But that's the unpredictability about this fight. And that's why it's far more unpredictable than Conor and Floyd. Conor and Floyd, even the oddsmakers look at this and go, get the fuck out of here. Floyd should run over Conor McGregor.
Conor's a lot closer than Berto was.
Which is crazy, but that's because there's going to be a lot of money coming on McGregor from a bunch of stupid people. But Canelo Triple G is a far more competitive fight where a lot of people really don't know what's going to happen. Like, if it was one side, like if Golovkin ran in there and just ran over Canelo, I wouldn't be surprised at all. But I don't think it's going to be that one-sided. I think, you know, if you ask me right now, I think Golovkin could knock him out deep into the fight. But who knows? With Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, I come into that fight going, there's one way this fight's going to go. It's one-way traffic. Anybody with a brain knows which way. There's no real unpredictability. It's a bunch of – it's almost like for you, it's almost like this Cavs-Warriors series where you're going, well, they could win a couple of games. Like I said, I will not be surprised if Golden State runs them over. I will not be surprised if Floyd Mayweather steps in that ring with Conor McGregor and runs him over and knocks him out. Not at all. I would be absolutely surprised if Conor McGregor laid a finger on Floyd Mayweather and hurt him.
That'd be some shit. I don't know if Floyd knocked him out. That'd be crazy.
It's just not something – like when you talk about unpredictability, this Conor Floyd fight is far more predictable than Canelo Triple G.
I think there's a bigger chance of a wow moment. No one can wrap their head around McGregor winning. How crazy would that shit be?
That's not unpredictable. That is a shocking moment in a vacuum. That is not something that anybody's expecting at all. That's not like there are more ways that things can happen in a Triple G Canelo fight in terms of who can win and how, where nobody thinks at all that Conor can beat Floyd in a boxing match straight up.
No, that's the only thing ruled out is the decision.
That's out of here. Like, and even a Conor knockout, it's like Floyd's never been beat. Like, come on, guys, let's be serious here. Floyd's never been beat. He's been hurt by a couple of people. A couple.
It's hard to knock someone out smooth in boxing. And catching, you know, like the Pacquiao, their Amir Khan type style knockout where they just laid out. And that's even the most skilled guys. So I'll give you that. Because if Conor touches him and hits him hard, Floyd still gets a 10 count.
Dude, Conor has never fought anybody. Like, I think if Floyd fought in MMA and hit somebody with those small ass gloves, he knocked them out. As accurate as Floyd Mayweather is, there's a difference with them big.
Would it be a closer fight if Floyd fought in MMA than it is Conor fighting in boxing?
Yes. Here's why. Conor's a stand-up fighter. So it's a little bit more intrigue in an MMA fight because Conor doesn't necessarily take people down. He probably would, right? Like that's probably what would happen.
Yeah, but he still had to catch Floyd. You gotta get close enough to do so.
But my point is, in an MMA fight, I think Conor still approaches the fight standing up, right? So it gives Floyd at least a chance. Like, yeah, these two in a boxing match where there are no kicks allowed, like, Conor has no chance. Not to say Floyd has much of a chance in an MMA fight, but the longer it stays standing, the more opportunities Floyd has to hit him. Because if Nate Diaz can rock that chin, Floyd Mayweather probably can too.
That's crazy. I mean, that's a good one. Once again, choosing sides for that one was tough. I just think it's the bigger fight. It's so crazy. You guys let us know what you think, because right now we got to move on to the next subject. Our 10 minutes for that one is up.
Now, the third one, number 3, practice the scorpion style. This style resembles the scorpion pincer. A little later, so he never met number 1 or number 2.
Next up, we have Jose Aldo Jr. taking another loss. I didn't see it coming, really. I'm not as shocked. I didn't see him getting stopped again. How about that? The ending was surprising. Max Holloway, Aldo looked good early, but there was no leg kicks. The fight was just crazy. and unpredictable in all factions, since we're talking about unpredictability. Really, I didn't see anyone that saw it going that way. But the question in this debate is, worst loss for Jose Aldo? Conor McGregor's 13-second knockout, or Max Holloway putting him away in three rounds? The lesser name, the lesser hype. Take it away. I'll let you go first again.
Oh, do you want to pick a side, or you just want me to pick one?
You pick one. I mean...
No. I'll let you, like, I'm going to give you an opportunity here. I'm going to let you pick which side, and you can go after me to counter.
All right, well, you're just trying to style on me now. Okay, I see how this is going. I see. I will take Max Holloway side. Go.
All right. So, the reason why Jose Aldo's loss to Conor McGregor is worse than the one to Max Holloway, it is the first time a casual fan got a look at Jose Aldo. And they came into that fight looking at Jose Aldo and heard all these things about how he was a monster. And this is the first time that Jose Aldo was on a big stage, headlining a pay-per-view against an opponent that the world was enamored with, which is Conor McGregor, who crossed over into the mainstream. And he got knocked the fuck out in 13 seconds. There is no coming back from that. Nothing. And even though this is going back to what I said in that previous argument about the TJ-DJ fight. Even though it was 13 seconds and most people go, shit happens, you get caught. The only thing people remember about Jose Aldo is he got knocked out in 13 seconds. It's not fair, but it's the facts. So him coming into the fight with Max Holloway, a lot of people already said he's damaged goods. So the aura of invincibility that Jose Aldo had, if he would have beat Conor McGregor, he would have carried that. And people would have been like, oh shit, Jose Aldo's for real on a mainstream level. Not just MMA fans like myself, not people who've been watching Jose Aldo ransack the WEC and then came to the UFC and started becoming a defensive points fighter. And that's where he fucked up, first of all. But then he fought Conor McGregor in a fight that had so much hype behind it, as Conor McGregor tormented him through every single city through that world tour, shows up on the grand stage and completely shits the bed. So, of course, that fight's going to be way more devastating. Because it's the one that people saw and people that remember. People who have never saw an MMA fight watched that fight because they wanted to see what Conor McGregor was going to do. There's a reason why Conor McGregor is the 24th highest paid athlete in the world today and the first MMA fighter to crack that. It's because of how big he is and how popular he is. Max Holloway is not even close. There are a lot of people that if you told them, hey, Max Holloway beat Jose Aldo, they probably go, who? So that doesn't matter to the casual fan. And then if you tell them, oh, yeah, the guy that Conor McGregor beats in 13 seconds, because that's the only way you can describe Jose Aldo these days.
That hurts, and it follows him. I'll give you that. And that was a devastating loss. You know, damn near 10 years unbeaten before then. Max Holloway is worse, and I'll tell you why. Because Jose Aldo was never going to get mainstream respect anyway. Even if he beat Conor would have got a rematch, it would have been ran back. He doesn't have the mouthpiece of a Nate Diaz to get that real mainstream appeal. Win or lose. The 13-second knockout hurt, but even after that, what was his next fight? Immediate title match. Why? Because true MMA fans, hardcore MMA fans, people who follow the sport all the time, said he got caught. He is still the greatest featherweight fighter and or small fighter of all time. DJ was, you know, him and DJ were a toss-up, right? He was still held in that high regard, even after the McGregor fight. He went, Frankie Edgar dominated him, cool. He just got caught. This is the Jose we know. Jose's still Jose. It's all good. He's still arguably, he was still the pound-for-pound fighter for a reason. McGregor is just that great. That's all people thought. McGregor is just that great. Okay, he gets a mulligan. Not surprised he holds the belt again. He's going to run through the division again. He just can't beat McGregor. That was the narrative. That's why he got an immediate title shot again. That's why he got awarded the title instead of fighting for it. He was just unanimous champion. He was the champion when Conor McGregor moved on. Undisputed again, which it's clearly disputed. And he was that good because of reputation, because it was just Conor McGregor, because Conor was that special. All of that is gone now. Max has erased that. Never again will there be fear of Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo wants another title shot. He now has to climb the ranks. He's never had to climb the ranks in the UFC. Ever. Before or after the McGregor knockout. Holloway has erased the entire mystique and, I dare say, legacy of Jose Aldo. So, at Champions, we wrote the article. Oh, Jose Aldo's legacy is ruined because of McGregor's 13-second knockout. Last week on the show, we talked about it. I said it's not ruined. It's still there. McGregor just inherited that. And he took it on and kept it moving. It doesn't hurt you, really. He's borrowing that. After you guys are both retired, your legacy will come back. You're straight. This Holloway one wrecks the legacy. Because now he's not as good. Now Holloway's on a longer fight streak than Aldo, even, I believe. Aldo in the UFC fought 7 times in 10 years. Holloway's on a 10-11 fight winning streak. You could argue Holloway's a better UFC fighter already than Jose Aldo ever was. Not saying that that's true. There's an argument. Jose got knocked down 13 seconds against McGregor. And obviously, Holloway went the distance. One of the few to go the distance with McGregor. So there's arguments to be made. Jose's legacy amongst hardcore fans was ruined by getting knocked out. Not just beat. Knocked out by Max Holloway. And crying in the octagon again. This hurts so much more than the flash. Oh, it could be a fluke. Conor McGregor knockout. They went toe-to-toe. It was 3 rounds. Holloway took Jose's best punches, gave him the 4-piece combo with the biscuit, and took his belt. And paraded through the streets of Hawaii like the shit was a luau. That's going to hurt forever. I'm not sure if Jose Aldo will ever be the same. Jose Aldo might just veer into, like, try to go up in weight. He could be what we see in Anthony Pettis, just a shell of himself. And it could be over.
So here's my question. If I ask you to go out in the street right now and say, explain who Jose Aldo is to somebody, what are you going to tell
him? that's an unfair question. Hold on, that's an unfair question. Because I, once again, I have to explain this to a casual fan, which you are right. If I'm just talking to a random person, I'd be like, yo, you know, Jose Aldo. They'd be like, who? The little Brazilian Conor knocked out in 13 seconds. Oh, yeah, he was talking all that, and it's all about Conor. Once again, that's what Conor does. He steals your shot. So that's unfair. Talking about the people, the community that Jose would have forever been respected by, which is the hardcore fans, the true MMA fans, everyone that says he just lost to Conor, he is still the best champion this division has ever seen. People were writing these articles before this fight. Holloway has erased that. He took away Aldo's foundation. Conor took away his ability to boost to another level. He still always had his foundation. Holloway's erased the foundation. He ain't got shit to land on. It's a long fall.
Well, I think people will still say that Jose Aldo was the greatest featherweight until Holloway breaks Jose Aldo's record. So I don't even think the foundation is completely broken. Everybody loses eventually.
I think they're saying McGregor's the best featherweight ever already.
Well, I mean, but again, if we're saying that it's Conor McGregor, the person we're not saying is Max Holloway. So when you talk about the worst loss, the most memorable loss, the loss that everybody's going to talk about, like people aren't going to talk about Pacquiao losing to Timothy Bradley. People are going to talk about Pacquiao losing to Floyd Mayweather and getting knocked out by Juan Manuel Marquez. The Bradley thing is something that people are just going to forget about. Like Tyson's lost several fights. People are going to talk about Buster Douglas because it was so shocking. Tyson was a terrorist. Like, Holly Holm, like, nobody cares. Like, okay, Ronda Rousey losing to Holly Holm is worse than Ronda Rousey losing to Amanda Nunes. Why? Because everybody's going to blame Ronda Rousey losing to Amanda Nunes on Holly Holm. Just like everybody has blamed Jose Aldo losing to Max Holloway on Conor McGregor.
I was one of those people. Fair point. I said Conor stole his soul. The chin never recovers.
So, you know, ultimately, in my humble opinion, Jose just fought the wrong fight.
They're both wrong. I mean, they're both bad, though. I mean, we're like, arguing some bad. They're both really bad losses.
Dude, it's just Jose Aldo's approach to the fight game is something that I wrote this week. He's changed. He has changed. If you watch Jose Aldo, when I watched him kill Jonathan Brookins, Cub Swanson, Like, he killed everybody in WC. Mike Brown, Uriah Faber's thigh is still like an MMA artifact because it was destroyed. That was a different Jose Aldo.
What happened to the leg kicks? Even when he was a points fighter, he had leg kicks.
But my point is, like, if you watch him in WEC, like, he was offensive and aggressive.
He was a killer back then.
And so when people stepped into the cage with him, before it was the Octagon and the UFC, when they stepped into the cage with him, they were concerned. What's he going to do to me?
Who did he knock out in 18 seconds or something? Cub? It was like 8 seconds? Cub Swanson
was 8 seconds.
8 seconds.
Flying.
Yeah, it was dirty. Just reckless abandon. He came with bad intentions.
But it's that Jose Aldo that people feared. And, like, he got goaded into being aggressive against Conor McGregor. But every fight, Kenny Florian, Mark Hominick, Chan Sung Jung, he was like a points fighter. Chad Mendes, like, granted, he knocked out Mendes with that knee in the first fight. But if you watch these fights, he's not as aggressive anymore. People aren't scared of Jose Aldo anymore. Max Holloway, once he realized that Jose Aldo was not going to be aggressive, at the end of the second round, he put his hands up like, what's up, fool? Like, this is what you're going to do? Like, you're going to let me get close to you and start throwing punches. Like, I said from the beginning, I wouldn't be surprised if Max won because Joseph, he's not the same guy. I thought he would deploy a leg kick. Make Max think twice. If Max is standing next to you and just throwing hands, he's going to beat you. And that's what he did. High volume, make Jose uncomfortable, force him to make a mistake, get the chin touch. I didn't pick Max to win, but that's how I thought he would win, and that's how he won. But going back to the original question, it's all because of Conor. His biggest loss will always be Conor because Conor's claim to fame to become Conor McGregor, he knocked out Jose Aldo. If he didn't knock out Jose Aldo as quick as he did, he wouldn't be as big. Like, the shock and awe of him knocking out a guy that most people had never heard of but heard was a 10-year monster and a savage, and there's no way Conor could beat this guy. And he knocked him out. That made Conor McGregor's career. Like, Max Holloway beat Jose Aldo, and people are like, Conor already did that. So it's a worse loss.
Once again, Max Holloway's chasing the ghost at this point of Conor McGregor.
It's true.
So, I mean, everyone is. That's never going to change in that division because Holloway lost to McGregor. You can't find anyone in that division where you point at and say, they can beat Conor McGregor. You just can't do it right now. So the division is forever cursed, and it's a specter of McGregor just hanging over it. And that's that. We'll see who the fans and the listeners pick, who is right in this conversation, me or you, is it McGregor or is it Holloway? What is the worst loss for Aldo?
After number 3 left, I took on pupils number 4 and 5. Number 4, in fact, was older than number 2 and 3. And he practiced the lizard style. The lizard is a very agile and nimble child, and particularly effective in climbing. When it's mastered properly, it enables a man to climb like a lizard.
All right, it's wrestling time. And you know what that means? We get to make Andreas upset. Every time we talk wrestling, the tone switches in the podcast. And this one is a tough one. Better storyline heading into the summer, Raw or SmackDown? We're at a point now, which is where we were last year. It was kind of the dog days leading into SummerSlam, where they just repeated everything from WrestleMania, and it's the same old storylines, and they hit the reset button around Money in the Bank time. This time, it was the Fatal 5-Way at Raw, which is pretty much Money in the Bank, right? Except we know when the briefcase is getting cashed in. But they had the same thing, an open tournament to see who's the number one contender somewhere down the line. I'm taking Raw. Better storyline going through the summer, and for one reason and one reason only, and that is your boy, Samoa Joe. Him and Paul Heyman's promo. The hell with a match. I don't care who he faces a match. The promo with him and Paul Heyman was my favorite thing on WWE television. I'd say in the past year.
Better than the Festival of Friendship?
Better than the Festival of Friendship.
Better than Braun Strowman destroying Roman Reigns? Those are my two favorites.
Okay, listen, those are great moments. This almost brought a tear to my eye. Samoa Joe's promo, I don't know how this doesn't go the entire summer. I think the WWE put the thing on Samoa Joe, he won. You know what? Great balls of fire, ho-hum, him and Brock Lesnar go at it. you know, give Samoa Joe a quick moment. Fans been talking about this. Throw him a bone. Joe came up from NXT. Let's see what he has. Lesnar crush him. We'll move into Reigns territory around SummerSlam or the return of Strowman, right? I thought that was their mindset. We'll just get Brock through one quick little one-off feud and keep it moving. This promo changes all of that. Because now this program goes through SummerSlam. In one promo, Joe showed what everyone knew. What you knew, shit, for a decade now. Which is Joe is best as a top guy. And as your top guy week in and week out. And that's what's special against someone who has to go against Brock Lesnar. Is that you have to build the feud by your damn self. Because Lesnar's on limited dates. You're building the feud between you and Heyman to eventually wrestle Brock Lesnar. And this promo was gold. Everything he said was great. The delivery was amazing. The crowd had to feel it. The way that he dropped the mic and whispered ever so gently into Paul Heyman's ear while stroking and caressing his chin about the way he was going to choke him out. He romanticized choking him out and delivering the message to Lesnar and then followed through with it. When was the last time you saw Uncle Paulie take a bump? Uncle Paulie was laid out, sprawled out. He damn near foamed at the mouth like Finn does. It was incredible. And Lesnar showing up next week. I'm hyped. I'm going to watch Raw next week. I can't wait for that opening segment. Because now I want to see what Lesnar's going to do. I want to see Samoa Joe stand face to face with Lesnar. What if they let Samoa Joe choke Lesnar out? How crazy is it? Samoa Joe can't win the match at Great Balls of Fire. But he might choke Brock Lesnar out. Like on some real shit. What if Samoa Joe puts him in a leg lock and gives an ode to Frank Mir? How crazy. The possibilities are endless. I want to see this between now and SummerSlam. I want to see it taken the whole way. Put Roman Reigns on the bench. I don't know who the hell he's going to feud with. I don't care. Samoa Joe is about to carry this feud and really make his mark on Raw and as a top guy in this company. And if anyone can take the belt off of Brock Lesnar, I wouldn't doubt that it's Samoa Joe. I don't think that he does it, but the feud just feels fresh and new, and I'm hype. This is the best thing in WWE television all summer, and I already know it.
Okay, so you just took one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and I have to argue against this, right?
Yes, don't let me go first.
So here we go. The reason why SmackDown has a better storyline going into the summer than Raw is because we know the finish to Brock Lesnar, Samoa Joe. Granted, the WWE would be smart to really pay attention to Samoa Joe, but Samoa Joe is put in this position for a reason. For a guy for Brock Lesnar to beat and headed to SummerSlam, and the reason why this happened in the first place was because Braun Strowman got hurt. Let's just be clear here. Strowman doesn't get hurt. They probably set this up a little earlier, but maybe Strowman goes against Lesnar. Lesnar beats Strowman. Like, they're clearly working towards this whole Lesnar-Roman Reigns WrestleMania thing. Like, maybe that'll change later, but right now, that's the game plan. So, that feud, as much as I'm excited, I wish it was on a bigger stage, but it's had Great Balls of Fire, yo.
I think it goes on to SummerSlam. I think Joe proves that it's so hot and so much fire behind it that they keep it going.
Yeah, no. Vince is short-sighted. They're using Samoa Joe as a body, because let's be clear here. Again, I don't think Samoa Joe was in their big plans heading into the summer until Braun Strowman got hurt. So they have kind of put this together at the last minute on some short-sightedness and was like, all right, we need to give him a warm body that he could beat. I didn't think Samoa Joe would win Extreme Rules because I didn't think it'd be wise to feed him to Lesnar. Now, hopefully this isn't a squash match, which I don't think it will be. I think Brock is going to have to fight for once, but we don't know. Like, we clearly don't know. But we know that Lesnar's going to win. Like, we all can agree that there's no way Lesnar's going to drop the strap at Great Balls of Fire. That's just not happening.
Do you have to say it like that?
Yeah, because it's the worst name pay-per-view probably in the history of pay-per-views. This is awful.
There's been some bad ones, but yeah.
I have no idea why this is. So, to argue the side of SmackDown, there's a lot more unpredictability going on with Money in the Bank. There's a lot more talent involved here between Shinsuke Nakamura and before I let me preface it with this. The oddsmakers right now have Baron Corbin winning Money in the Bank. And if that happens...
Oh, shit.
But the fact that you have Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler all involved in this Money in the Bank ladder match is already the best match of the summer. Because as much as I would love to see Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar, I said this on Twitter, it's not 2005. We're not getting 2005 Lesnar or 2005 Joe. So whatever happens, I still think it's going to be Lesnar's best match. It should be. But I don't think Lesnar can go 20, 30 minutes, right? So this ladder match is a lot better. It's a lot more interesting. I don't know who's going to win. Baron Corbin wins, I'd be disgusted. It wouldn't make any sense because a heel holds the title right now. But that whoever holds that briefcase, and, you know, I've always wanted to see it. I think Kevin Owens should be the one to hold the briefcase, by the way. I don't think it should be Nakamura. I think it should be Kevin Owens because Kevin Owens is the best mouthpiece on SmackDown right now. And he's a clear agitator, and he knows how to be a heel. So him teasing the cash in the briefcase against anybody is much more fun than anybody else having it. Even Shinsuke Nakamura, because let's be real, Shinsuke doesn't cut great promos. He's more of an attraction than a complete wrestler. So I'm more intrigued by that. And SmackDown as a whole is a better show than Raw. Even the women's Money in the Bank is more intriguing than anything that's going on in the Raw women's division right now because they've effectively buried Bayley.
It's horrible.
It's over. For her to lose in 5 minutes to Alexa Bliss clearly means we've lost confidence in Bayley and we need to move on. So that entire women's division, because between her and Sasha being involved in a mixed tag match against Alicia Fox, that women's division is falling off. So the women's SmackDown division, even though Naomi and Lana is a joke,
that's going to be a horrible match.
Unless there is something we have never seen before, which I just don't believe, right? I just believe I have no idea why they're doing this. It must be something that we don't know. And I forgot, Sami Zayn is also in the Money in the Bank ladder match. This Money in the Bank ladder match is going to be the shit. It's going to be better. It's going to be better than anything else. Five way was good, but Money in the Bank is going to be better. Come on. It's just this. Baron Corbin is the worst talent you got in the ring, but everybody else is remarkable. But SmackDown, they Breezango is more fun than the tag team division right now. The New Day, they're back. SmackDown is a better show. They have the better storylines. I'm more intrigued.
But if you're not better at the top, if your top is Jinder Mahal, Randy Orton, you are going to lose this summer. And if it's Randy Orton versus Baron Corbin, we're all going to pull our damn hair up.
Yeah, probably won't be. I mean, look, Jinder Mahal, it's hard for me to make this argument because I've already argued against it. He's terrible in the ring. It's not fun to watch. Randy Orton, not fun to watch. This is your top program. Not fun to watch. But everything else underneath, it's a lot better. So, and I figure if you're asking me through the summer, I figure if Joe and Lesnar becomes a one-off and then Brock Lesnar takes the title and holds it hostage again until SummerSlam and we don't see him anymore, I'm going to be more intrigued with what SmackDown does. It's more interesting. It's better. I don't think Joe Lesnar carries up in the SummerSlam unless there's a change of plans, because obviously that's not the game plan they have in mind. It's not. And I think the other thing to look at here is let me ask you, do you think that the plans that WWE has right now is Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns at WrestleMania next year?
I do.
Okay.
And so I think he holds the belt until then, which is sad.
So if that happens, if that is the plan, which nobody wants to see, none of us, nobody, that means that Brock Lesnar needs to beat Samoa Joe, Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor. Who is left? Is there anybody left? Am I missing anybody? This should be worthy of a title shot?
No, not really. I mean, Bray Wyatt?
Yeah.
He was in the match. Like, you're just going to...
Yeah, I know, but yeah. So, but my point is that Brock needs to beat Joe now, Braun, Seth at Survivor Series, and Finn at Royal Rumble. That's kind of like how it has to go before we get to WrestleMania, right? Hopefully they're not all squash matches, but I figure that this is the route they have to go. That's not a lot of room for Joe to have a rematch with Brock Lesnar. As unfortunate as it is, it's kind of like Dean Ambrose and Triple H's feud, where you knew that Dean couldn't beat Triple H before he had to wrestle at WrestleMania. Like, Dean had to lose, but they had a great match. What was it, Speed Bump? What the hell is his name? Roadblock,
Speed Bump. Same shit.
But Dean Ambrose ended up having a great match with Triple H. And people were like, dude, maybe this should change. Maybe they should make it a triple threat. Like, we all got excited because we haven't seen that Dean Ambrose since. But we all got excited, and everybody talked about how great that match was. But then it was over and never heard from again. Same thing's going to happen with Joe. So I can't, as much as I love Joe, as much as I love to agree with you here, we're in a debate. and I have to debate the fact. And the fact is, the more interest lies in SmackDown because Raw is entirely too predictable.
Listen, I hope you're right, because I really like SmackDown, but I don't think they can produce anything close to what we're going to see in Samoa Joe versus Brock Lesnar, and it better not let me down, because I'm entirely too hyped for this feud. And you've been calling for it since Joe came over.
I called for it before Joe. Like, when I used to watch Joe on TNA, before, when Joe was still in the X Division, because he was ridiculous. This is, like, my wealth of wrestling knowledge is pretty damn deep. So when I saw Joe back then, I was like, damn, wouldn't it be great to, like, two athletic big guys. Yeah. Right?
Old school Lesnar, though. More than three moves Lesnar. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
2005, like, when Lesnar was trucking and, like, yeah, the Shooting Star Press, great. But there was so much more that Lesnar did in the ring. Like, his matches.
Suplexes, clotheslines, he don't got none of that shit anymore.
Like, he's been reduced to Suplex City and, like, a clothesline and an F5. So it's like, it's hard for me to get excited that, like, hopefully Joe brings out the best of him, but it's not really, we don't really see that parity in between those two.
No, I think it's going to be like an MMA shoot, though. I think you're going to see, like, stuff that looks like real punches. You're going to see a takedown, the ground and pound, Joe covering up. You're going to see ground transitions. It's going to be 5 to 6 minutes of what looks like octagon fighting with an F5 at that.
We'll see.
And that I am excited for. The last thing to argue today in our Versus episode is coming up right now.
The fifth pupil, he practiced the Toad style. Four and five knew each other, but never met the other three. The Toad style is immensely strong and immune to nearly any weapon. When it's properly used, it's almost invincible. It can even bend solid metal.
The last one. This is it. And we got to choose our sides right now, just on air, because I already know my side. I'm not even giving you an option. We're talking New Japan Pro Wrestling, because we've been on a huge New Japan kick. Everyone who's been listening to the show knows it. Several people have gone out and got New Japan World just because of it. We're on it. This is time where New Japan ramps up. It really never has a down period, but this is when it really gets hot. And we just saw the end of Best of the Super Juniors tournament, in which, don't spoil the last night for me, I still haven't seen it. But wow. I saw everything. Don't wow me. Everything leading up. Osprey is in it again. I can't believe it. I have to see how it ends. But I'm hyped for Dominion, which comes on Friday, depending on when you guys listen to this. Either it's out already, or you guys still have time to catch it and be super hyped like us to watch Dominion. Kenny Omega, another shot at the title before the their USA tour. I think he wins it versus Okada. That's going to be a great matchup. Great matchups all up and down that card. But our question right now is, better tournament, Best of Super Juniors or the G1 Climax? I'm going first. I'm taking Best of Super Juniors. Why? Simple. I love the flippy shit. I will forever love the flippy shit. There's very little better in professional wrestling than Ricochet versus Will Ospreay. I like the choreography they show. They mix in a little bit of strong style. I like to see all the tricks, all the aerials. Shit that, man, just growing up and watching the WCW Cruiserweight division, and for so long, that was the best thing going in WCW for actual wrestling. And these guys do the same thing. They just take it to the next level. So many good matches. Marty Scurll this year, ACH. Juice and Thunder Liger's old ass was getting in matches, giving it his all. Everyone showed out this year, and I think this is going to, when we look back, you know, late summer, early fall, Best of Super Juniors is going to be light years beyond what we see in G1. Even though I like the stories told through G1, and the booking is great and everything, maybe better stories, as far as matches, I don't think it can top Best of Super Juniors.
Are you done?
I'm done.
You're done.
Oh, okay. King of New Japan, tell me how I am wrong.
You're so, like, the G1 Climax is the best tournament in pro wrestling by a country mile. Best of Super Juniors was
this
an excellent.
This year, though.
It'll be better this year, too. Best of Super Juniors, like, okay. How long have you been watching New Japan?
I've been watching it for 2.5 years. Thank you. All right. Thank you for putting me on.
So, if you do yourself a favor, go back and read Dave Meltzer's ratings. Now, look, Dave Meltzer's not always right with his five-star ratings. G1 Climax produces more five-star matches than any wrestling pay-per-view event ever. Consistently.
It's very true.
Always. Best of Super Juniors this year was great. You had Will Ospreay. You had Mario Scull. You had a lot of rising talent. But without the G1 Climax, which is always, it's never not delivered. Like, let's just be clear here. The tournament itself is never not delivered at least one five-star match. So, to suggest the Best of Super Juniors would be better is ridiculous. Yes,
it's going to be hard to top that Skrull Ospreay match. In which, just because it has some flippy shit, it doesn't get a five-star rating, but don't get me started.
Look. Ospreay Skrull was good, but it wasn't close to a five-star match. The matches that have been five-star this year have involved who? Kenny Omega.
Okada.
Who once competed in the Best of Super Juniors. And Okada, who is consistently producing. Tanahashi is also in this. So, and Ishii is also in this. Shibata, you know, hope he gets better. He doesn't seem like he may not ever come back. But you have guys who have consistently produced 4.5 to 5-star matches competing in this round robin tournament in G1. Best of Super Juniors doesn't have that. They don't have that level of talent. And
their talent pool this year is deeper than it's been in a long time.
In Block A.
Yeah, Block B was a little thin.
Let's be honest.
But they stacked G1 like that a lot as well.
Well, no, because you had Naito, who I can never forget.
I saw a lot of bad luck Fale last year in Block B.
Of course, but we saw like Volador Jr. this year in Best of Super Juniors. So, and we saw Taka Michinoku. And
oh, granted, that was ugly.
As much as we like Juice and Thunder Liger, I mean, come on, man. He's a legend by name, and his matches are okay.
He had some okay matches. Yeah.
He did. His match with Will Ospreay was okay. G1, yes, there are going to be a few matches because G1 is extremely long and it takes several weeks to get through. That there are going to be matches that aren't great. But when the highs reach the high, they're going to top Best of Super Juniors. And you can put your bottom dollar on that. There's no way that Best of Super Juniors is going to be better than G1 because it's never happened. And it's not happening this year. G1 is the better tournament. And if you're a pro wrestling fan, and if you're a fan, I mean, Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles, the guys who you're watching today were putting on excellent matches in G1. And in order to get that title shot, like Tanahashi winning and facing Okada, like these guys had to go through G1 and put on these classic matches to get there. G1's a better tournament. And it, on top of that, it just has more meaning.
It does have more meaning. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously you go and you get the title shot at Wrestle Kingdom. The biggest wrestling pay-per-view on Earth is Wrestle Kingdom. So, to headline that, and you actually headline it, Vince McMahon, it is huge. Still, with all that said, I'm not sold on this year's G1 climax.
We haven't even seen the field yet.
But I mean, just with their talent. Grant, they bring in people. They always surprise, right? Big Mike Elgin came through and had one hell of a run.
Showed out. Yep. Right? And that became a staple.
Yeah, yes, that surprised the hell out of me. I didn't pick that right away. I didn't even know he was in the field come this time last year. So, I mean, there's going to be surprises, right? I don't like Juice Robinson. He's probably going to get a huge push.
I don't know if he'll be. I don't think he's going to be in the tournament. I think he's going to be involved with the Never Openweight title. I don't think Ghetto's going to book him for that.
Oh, see, I thought Juice would be in it. Yeah, you just never, right? Like, this year is kind of weird because so much is revolving around Omega and Okada that I'm not sure where anyone else fits because their story is still so fluid that I feel like they have to finish it at Wrestle Kingdom next year.
Well, but then again, it's just like, I mean, I'm not going to spoil the finish of Best of Super Juniors, but there were so many storylines there that you weren't really sure was going to win. G1's kind of the same way because you have Naito, you have Ishii, who always just puts on great matches. He's not going to win the tournament. You have Kenny Omega, of course, whether he beats Okada or not, you know, because the champion's in the tournament as well. So it's like there's a lot of factors that go into G1 that just make this a much better tournament. Because Takahashi was in the Best of Super Juniors, right? And he lost. And he didn't even make it to the finals. So it's like But that's what happens. Like, G1, the champion usually doesn't win. We haven't seen it happen yet. So whoever is the champion.
I thought Okada won as the champion once and then dropped the belt. And then that's how he got the belt back.
I can't remember that. But
I thought that was it. I thought he entered, won it as champion, dropped the belt at like the next pay-per-view, and then went and obviously got the belt back. But
the point is, G1 has better matches. G1 has a bigger story to tell. And G1 culminates with a bigger story to tell on the grandest stage of them all.
There's just so many question marks this year that I'm not sure. Have to watch Tama Tonga in a final? Like, I don't want to see that.
Actually, Tama Tonga's pretty good. He's got a lot better. And Tama Tonga's better than a lot of guys on the WWE roster. Listen, a lot of people last year said, I don't know what's going to happen. AJ Styles and Nakamura left and Gallows and Anderson.
Yeah.
And what happened? They turned to one of their better tournaments.
Kenny Omega caught fire. That's what happened.
Exactly. So you can never, like, if you learned any lesson over the past year, in your 2.5 years of watching New Japan, if you learned any lesson, is you can't count out New Japan to still put on the best wrestling in the world.
They always find a way.
So with that being said, you can have your question marks. But when G1 happens, you're going to be watching. You're going to be more emotionally invested, as much as you love the flippy shit.
Love the flippy shit.
You're going to be more invested in what happens in G1. Because whatever happens this weekend with Okada and Kenny Omega, yes, it will carry over into G1. But there is no guarantee that these two will rematch at Wrestle Kingdom. So you're going to be glued trying to figure out what's going to happen. And along the way, you're going to get some very special matches.
Well, I hope so. We shall see. You guys let us know what you think of each one of our versus segments. Who won what? Where you guys stand. But for right now, it is the end of the show. Make sure you guys follow us on social media at The Corner LSN on all platforms. Me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. Make sure you guys pack this weekend full of wrestling. Next weekend, we have boxing. We have MMA to gear up for. There's MMA every weekend. But next weekend, we have the Black Beast putting in work. So that's going to be fun. Tons of good stuff to talk about. We have Money in the Bank next weekend as well. So it's a packed show next week. And I'm sure someone's going to do some crazy shit that we have to talk about in the beginning of the show. So thank you guys for listening. Until then, we're out.
Peace.